pharmaceutical companies and the food companies running the FDA, and they told them to make food more addictive. We are the sickest country in the world. We have the highest chronic disease burden of any nation on earth.
Make America healthy again. Like, who can argue against this?
The hospitals make money by keeping people sick. 48 cents out of every dollar that Americans pay to the federal government for taxes is going to healthcare.
You took the food pyramid that I grew up with and you flipped it upside down.
Well, there's a lot of vested interests that have trillions of dollars at stake in undermining MAHA. The FDA allowed the industry to hijack the GRAS standard and apply it to any ingredient. So by 1995, the two biggest food companies in the world were R.J. Reynolds and Philip Morris. And they took thousands of scientists who were engaged in making tobacco more addictive, and they told them to make food more addictive. MAHA was happening long before I arrived. People like your sister, they're all over the country. They knew something was wrong.
What you're doing right now with HHS and this country is amazing. It makes you a superhero.
There's no such thing as Democratic children or Republican children. They're all of our children, and we want them healthy.
The Homeland is brought to you by
Hi, I'm Dean Cain, and this is The Homeland here on Proud American Studios, where we discuss all things truth, justice, and the American way. Today, I am honored to be sitting down with Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy day to speak with us. Appreciate it.
Happy to be with you, Dean.
It's a pleasure. Now, you spent your entire career in public service, especially as an environmentalist. You're an attorney for Riverkeeper. You founded the Waterkeeper Alliance, Children's Health Defense, and so many other things. And you also ran for president in 2024 as a Democrat. But here we sit in 2026, and you are serving under President Trump as the Secretary of Health and Human Services. 5 years ago, if you'd have told me this was the case, I would have thought that would be insane. How did we get here? And is this the very best place that you can help America? For what you're doing, I think is amazing.
Yeah, I think providentially ended up where I'm supposed to be, where I can be most effective. And, you know, I love this job. It's the biggest agency in the government. It's got a $1.7 trillion budget, so it's twice the size of the Pentagon. And it touches, it's 20% of the economy, healthcare. And so it touches everybody's lives. And it's a target-rich environment because there was so much mismanagement at the agency for so many years because of agency capture, because of the pharmaceutical companies and the food companies running the FDA and running it to advance their mercantile interests rather than public health. And then a tremendous amount of corruption as well. We were allowing $100 billion a year to be stolen from us. And there was literally no program integrity when I came in. So there are a lot of things to fix. And so it feels like I'm being effective. You know, we see problems every day. And we're there to fix them. We're not there to be caretakers of an agency that's, you know, spiraling down.
And there, I would imagine there probably are a number of those agencies, and things have been sort of, I would say almost, it seemed from the, you know, sitting outside here, like it's status quo. Like things have been allowed to go on that way for a long, long time. You've spent your whole career in this field, and now you're the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I was really for the most of my career, I was an environmental lawyer and I was suing big polluters. But it's the same thing in that sphere. You know, the agencies that are supposed to be protecting the public from pollution have been captured by the industry they're supposed to regulate. And the agencies themselves have become sock puppets for those industries. And the same is true here. HHS was really working for the pharmaceutical industry and the medical cartel. And then it's loaded with healthcare in this country is governed by perverse incentives. People are not doctors, pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, the hospitals make money by keeping people sick. And that doesn't mean that the people who work at those companies or those institutions are bad people, but the economic incentives drive behavior. And even when somebody is personally, you know, moral and wants to do the best, they're overwhelmed by these financial incentives that only allow you to make money if you're ordering more tests and keeping the person sick. And so, unwinding those perverse incentives is part of the what we're doing, of trying to change to a value-based care model across the agency, which means that you make money by actually getting people healthier.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
And and that will set up, new moral goalposts. And it allows people within the agency and people in the medical community to actually do what they want to do, which is to heal people. Right now, there's so much economic financial headwinds against actual healing that it's not taking place. And as a result of that, we are the sickest country in the world. We have the highest chronic disease burden of any nation on earth. We pay 2 to 3 times what Europeans do for healthcare, and we have much worse health outcomes. And our chronic disease epidemic is now, it's an existential crisis for our country. 77% of American kids can't qualify for military service because they have chronic diseases. And then the cost of it is also debilitating for our country. When my uncle was president, we spent zero on chronic disease. And today we spend $4.3 trillion. 48 cents out of every dollar that Americans pay to the federal government for taxes is going to healthcare. And about 90% of that are preventable chronic diseases most of them are food induced.
That's it. You took the food pyramid that I grew up with, that big pyramid, and you flipped it upside down. And is that part of the answer?
When I got this job about 16 months ago, a week after I came into office, I was handed the dietary guidelines that were developed during the Biden administration, and they were 453 pages long. They were incomprehensible, and they were written by food industry lobbyists. So they were they reflected the commercial aspirations of those companies rather than a public health or science motivation. And so we brought the best nutritionists in the country from the best universities in the country, and we locked about a dozen of them for 11 months in a room, and we said, come up with science-based dietary guidelines. And they got rid of the highly refined carbohydrates, they got rid of the ultra-processed foods, and they told Americans to eat protein, to eat vegetables, to eat high-quality grains. And that is the way that we're going to make America healthy, and that's the way that we're going to end the chronic disease epidemic, if people start eating good food.
That's gigantic. It sounds so simple and like it's such a little thing, but it's massive and it's huge.
Well, it's massive because it has the potential to really change the dietary culture in this country because through a number of mechanisms, but one of those mechanisms is that the federal government, particularly USDA, spends $405 million a day on food subsidies, so paying for food for Americans. Through the food stamp program, which is SNAP, through WICS program, through school lunches, through the Indian Health Services, and then there's also the military food and the VA. Among all of those, we spend billions. We spend probably about $15 billion a year subsidizing food for Americans, and that subsidized food will now have to align with the dietary guidelines. And that's going to drive better food into our schools. We also, Brooke Rollins, who's been a partner with me, who's the USDA secretary, has promulgated a rule that any of the thousands of retailers that accept food stamps will now have to double the amount of real food in their store of, you know, high quality food. So that food is going to become more affordable and more accessible for Americans. And hopefully we'll change the diet, particularly for our children, and they'll have a chance of living healthy lives.
You've been doing this work for a long time, and it's wonderful that you're in a position from an outsider sitting here watching it. When you became the Secretary of HHS, my sister, who's here with me today, she's our nutritional guru in the house. And I always call her, I'm like, hey, should I use this? Could I cook with this? How is this stuff? What is this stuff? You are implementing things that she's been talking about doing forever. So she's your biggest fan, by the way. And it just sounds like common sense to anybody who knows anything about it. And it seems like it's a common sense solution.
Yeah, and now it's become a political movement through the MAHA movement. But MAHA was happening long before I arrived. People like your sister, they're all over the country. They knew something was wrong. And they just needed it articulated. And, you know, now they've come together in this very, very powerful movement. And I like the fact that Democrats are now struggling to claim ownership of the movement, and Republicans are, because it's just going to get Americans healthy. And I don't care whether it's done by Democrats or Republicans. We need to make, there's no such thing as Democratic children or Republican children. They're all of our children, and we want them healthy. And, you know, if we can agree to get rid of the ultra-processed food, that's going to get us a lot of the way there.
You know, you never hear, make America healthy again. Like, who can argue against that? But people are arguing. There are people who don't like the movement.
Well, there's a lot of vested interests that have trillions of dollars at stake in undermining MAHA. And so, you know, I get attacked every day in the press, and people see that. But I think people see through it. And they understand that anybody who challenges vested interests is going to face headwinds. But people are from all across the country are rallying around this cause.
Well, it's funny because when you look at someone who's a spokesperson or a figurehead or the head of an agency, you're like, well, you know, I don't want a 5'4", 380-pound person as my health and human services secretary telling me what to eat and what to do. But you live the example. I mean, you're in better shape than half the 25-year-olds that I see running around. God bless you for that. How do you do that? How do you keep yourself in that kind of shape?
I make sure that I exercise every day, and I do a lot of walking, and I eat good food.
It's pretty simple. When you break it down into,
so yeah. It's not rocket science.
So I have a little story for you. So I was back in the day, I was probably 15, 20 years ago, even though I'm just barely older than that. But I was flying LA to New York or LA to Washington or something like that. And on my plane, you were in a couple seats ahead of me. I noticed you there. I was like, oh, okay. That's RFK Jr. That's very cool. Plane took off, you kicked off your shoes, you pulled out some notebooks, and you worked the entire five-hour flight. That's a perfect example. I was like, and that's what you seem to be doing now.
Yeah, no, when I'm on an airplane, I'm working. I treasure that time. It's time where, you know, nobody can reach me on a cell phone. And I get 3 or 4 or 5 hours uninterrupted to write. And so, you know, I've written a lot of books, probably 20 books, and almost all of them were written on airplanes.
I think you wrote one on that plane flight, too, because I mean, you were locked. I sat there and I was like, how long is he going to work like that? 2 hours, 3 hours? I started feeling very guilty myself because I had work to do and I couldn't get it done. I was like, well, he's doing it. I should do that. Leading by example is very important. You know, and to see someone like that, I was like, I have great admiration for you. And I was like, look at him go. Why am I being so lazy? So I picked up and tried to do a little bit more work. I know your time is precious here, so I'm going to try to be very quick. One thing I did want to ask you, I've had a home in Europe for 25 years, and the things that you eat, and we had talked about this earlier, actually, I was talking about having bread and thing, and there was glyphosate in the bread and thing. European, you know, things that we were eating here were not even allowed to be sold in Europe. And there's the additives we put in. Is that that same group that was basically the vested interests keeping those things in our, that sort of additives and things in our food here that they won't allow in Europe?
And it is corruption at FDA. FDA, FDA started regulating food quality in 1948, and Congress passed the Food and Drug Cosmetics Act back then, and they said, okay, any new ingredient that's added to food has to be safety tested. They created a loophole, which is called GRAS, which is generally recognized as safe. And they said that any ingredient that is long established in the marketplace, like vinegar and salt, stuff that human beings have been eating for eons, you don't have to do safety studies for those. And the industry, the FDA allowed the industry to hijack the GRAS standard and apply it to any ingredient so that the industry started adding all these ingredients in the 1980s, lab-created chemicals to our food. And those chemicals were not particularly safe. They were not nutritious. They, for example, they would take they would develop an aroma and a flavor that is like strawberries. And your body smells that and tastes it, and your body is craving the strawberries because you know strawberries are good for you. But when it gets to your gut, there's no nutrition in it. It's just a chemical. And so your body keeps demanding more, and you keep stuffing more stuff into your mouth to get it because your body's craving those nutrients, and you get fatter and fatter, and you're getting malnourished at the same time. And this is the first time in history where you have people who are extremely obese and malnourished at the same time. Yeah. And, I was peripherally involved in the tobacco litigation back in the late 80s and early 90s, and the tobacco industry then was the richest industry on earth. It was richer than the pharmaceutical, more cash on hand than pharma or big oil. But they saw the headwinds. They saw the regulatory headwinds. They saw the writing on the wall. Their consumers were turning against them and stopping smoking. And they were getting litigated against by the states, by private parties. So they started to divest, and they invested in the food industry. So by 1995, the two biggest food companies in the world were R.J. Reynolds and Philip Morris. And they took thousands of scientists who were engaged in making tobacco more addictive, and they told them to make food more addictive. And they developed the strawberry aromas and added salts and monosodium glutamate and sugars and things that made food addictive, and they're not nutrition. There's no nutrition in there. Americans started getting fatter and fatter, and they used the GRAS standard. They said any of these new chemicals, they called them all generally recognized as safe. And that, because of that, we have 10,000 ingredients in our food in this country. In Europe, they only have 400.
Total.
And, right. And 9,600 that we use are illegal in Europe. And that's why people report going to Europe and, eating pasta three meals a day and never getting fat and staying healthy and not getting eczema and not getting, all of these other kind of allergic reactions that people are getting, gluten allergies, celiac allergies, all of these adverse events that the food in our country causes that you don't experience when you go to Europe. So that's why it happened. It was partially because of industry corruption and industry greed. And then partially because our agencies had been captured by those industries and were not representing the American public anymore. And we're changing that now.
Yeah. Listen, I played a superhero on television. What you're doing right now with HHS and this country is amazing. It makes you a superhero well beyond Superman that I pretended to be. Really appreciate what you're doing. And as a father and as someone who cares deeply about this country and the people in it, thank you. Thank you very much for what you're doing. I know you know, it's a 4-year period of time. You got 3 left at least right now. I hope you set the example for what happens going on in the future. And I hope that you get to make America healthy again and save. You're going to save millions of lives, and the quality of lives that people are going to lead are so much higher.
Well, thank you, Dave.
No, God bless you. Thank you,
son.
Appreciate it.